True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I am Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Little do I know, if you've had some good shows to listen to the last 2 weeks, because I was in Central America. I was in Costa Rica, Central America. Wow. What? Oh, my golly. Gee whiz. Beauty. Went down there to do some of the Lord's work and reaped some beautiful rewards. Could have spent a lot more time there. I've been there before on vacation. I have been to the beaches of Guanacaste, which is the northwest region of of Costa Rica. Sorry, I forgot to put my headphones on here. Doing pretty good, huh? Yeah, that's what happens. I'm rusty. Let's see. Are they working? Nope. Okay, now I'm on. Oh, doesn't that figure? Well, okay, I think that you just had about almost 2 minutes of silence because I keep having problems with the connection to my mic. I've been gone for 2 weeks. I was in Costa Rica, and I ask, beg, plead, and pray that somebody technical will come and fix this problem with my mic. I know a gentleman came by at one point. Tom sent a man who was in town who is quite brilliant, apparently, but they're looking at one portion. And anyway, it's a mic connection. And so I apologize that you just sat there for 2 minutes. Well, I did talk, and man, was it good. You guys missed probably some of the best material I've ever put out there. No, that's a joke. Like I said, little do I know. How about this? How about the fact that you're listening to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor, sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington? And like I said, not so sure. I'm glad. In some ways, I'm glad to be back. In other ways, not so much. Went down to do a little bit of the Lord's work in Costa Rica. And what a beautiful country. I mentioned I've been there before, to Guanacaste, which is the northwest region, which is where all the beautiful beaches are, and it is dry. That's where they have, like, oh, Four Seasons, these ridiculous hotels where you pay $1,500 a night for the Four Seasons name. We used to stay in Four Seasons. Years back, they were expensive, but not just over the top ridiculous. Folks, what is going on in this world? Okay, first of all, just to clarify what I just said, you may have heard of Bora Bora, okay? And you may have heard of Tahiti, right? Tahiti's in the South Pacific. Now, I'm going to just be going all over the place. Back in the day, I don't remember how long ago, Four Seasons put in a new hotel in Bora Bora, which is supposed to be the primal real estate on earth. If I had money, they have atolls and motus, and basically what happens is you have this huge volcanic island, and around the volcanic island, you get a huge coral ring built that blocks all the waves from coming in towards the island. It's the most incredible thing you've ever experienced in your life. The coral ring reef, whatever you want to call it, is a couple miles out. So you are in bathwater. The water, 88 degrees, 90 degrees, just absolute pristine, fantasy. Inside of that water, the most beautiful fish you've ever seen in your life. You can't even fathom it, okay? Now, these are the side islands of Tahiti, not Tahiti itself. If you listen to this show and you decided we're going on a trip to Tahiti because I heard Kevin say it is great. I have been My wife and I have been beach chasers, I will call us, for countless years since we got together. Of course, it started with Mexico. We started the, you know, everybody starts with the, what do you call it, Puerto Vallarta, Puerto Vallarta. But the proper pronunciation is probably Puerto Vallarta or, say, you know, something like that. I don't know. But Puerto Vallarta. And we started going there and doing all that and taking our kids because it was cheap. And we'd stay in these hotels where a guy'd be chasing you around with a whip about every 26 seconds trying to sell you a timeshare in the biggest hunk of junk you've ever stayed in. We got one room at Paradise Village back for $226 for a week. Think about that. But boy, they were mad when we wouldn't buy a timeshare. Ooh, they worked us and worked us and beat us and worked us. And we just wouldn't, you know, no way would I own a timeshare. If you own a timeshare, you understand why. You pay all these fees, you're stuck, you only get certain weeks. They make it impossible to get the weeks. You trade, everything you trade goes down. That's not how to travel. My wife and I travel at the last minute on a whim, typically impulsively. We don't plan ahead. It's always like, okay, I've had like about 17 times too much pressure. I'm ready to blow. Away we go. We started going down to Cabo a few times. Cabo's an interesting place. The resorts are phenomenal. The town itself is kind of a dump. Apparently any drug you want, you got. I mean, these guys are like, it's so annoying. I mean, like you get in a cab, you know, you want cocaine. It's like, shut up. You know, you feel like smacking these guys, but you can't do it because you're in another country and you know, you don't even know what they'll do to you. In fact, back in the day again, when I was in college, I had a bunch of friends that went down to Tijuana. God knows why they were there. We used to go down and visit a friend in San Diego. They went to Tijuana, got chased, I don't know, got in a situation. Friend of mine got locked up in a paddy wagon, a police paddy wagon, and he said, full of guys, and they'd drive, and he said they'd stop every once in a while, and they'd pull somebody out, and they'd beat them. And then they'd strip them of their clothes and strip them of everything, and then they'd get back in and drive. And he was, you can imagine, do you think he was scared? Then he said, the worst thing is this one guy has an epileptic seizure, and the cops stop the van, these Mexican police officers, stop the paddy wagon, get out, grab this guy who's having an epileptic seizure, just beat him, take his clothes, take his stuff, and leave him there and drive up. My friend, Shane was his name. I won't give you his last name. If I did give it to you, you wouldn't be able to pronounce it anyway. Obergewich, gotcha. And this is many moons ago. And I think it started because he went into the bathroom. This is so not what the show's about. I've got to get through this quick. He went into the bathroom, didn't understand the culture, and the guy's standing there sticking his hand out, asking for money to use the bathroom. Well, they do that. I don't know. I don't know if they belong there or they don't or whatever. But I give them the money because guess what? I'm in Mexico and I'm not going to make rules and I sure don't want trouble. So I think he and this other fella, and the other fella wasn't a fella. He was. They were both college football players, big boys. One of them, Tom Jacobs, was a defensive lineman. I mean, the guy was like 6 foot, you know, 5, 265 pounds. And truly, people used to get us confused. They thought we were twin brothers. This is back when I was a gargantuan humongoid playing football and just as big as they came. But those days are long gone. Now I'm a coin dealer. So anyway, so he was one of the last ones that got out of the paddy wagon, and they pulled him out, took his stuff, left him I think they let him keep his pants and a belt and a barefoot. So he's walking down, he's way out in the middle of nowhere in Tijuana. He says this truck pulls up full of Mexicans. They throw him in the back. He can't speak a lick of Spanish. So I'm going to speed through this story. So these people knew what had happened. They took him all the way to the border. Now, you got to remember, this is the early mid-80s, probably the mid-80s. And they took him to the border. He told them what happened. They said, well, there's boxes over there full of clothes. So they let him get dressed. He had no passport. And they actually gave him a ride across the border and all the way back into San Diego to his friend's house. Now, that's Border Patrol. That's the way America used to work. I had situations growing up where I'd have like a flat tire and I'd have police officers give me rides places. I mean, we've come a long ways, folks, you know, to serve and or to protect and serve and all that. You know, it's kind of sad. But so anyway, that was one of my tangents. That's tangent number one. You only have 23 to go and the show will be over. So we started, my wife and kids and I started going to Puerto Vallarta. No, it's not like Tijuana, although one time I did eat in Tijuana. And I got so sick that the rest of the trip, my family went to Disneyland and SeaWorld and to see friends and everything else. And I was stuck in the room about two steps from death, and it was a bad choice. But we used to go to Puerto Vallarta. Then we started to seek more beaches. So we've been all over the world, you know, from the Middle East to, you know, Fiji and Tahiti and Australia and New Zealand and, you know, the entire, you know, the Caribbean from all the way from St. Lucia down in Venezuela, you know, all the way, of course, up to the Bahamas and, you know, all over. We've chased beaches everywhere, even, you know, Costa Rica. We went there. We've been all over. We've looked for beach, the best beach, and we've always had this little dream, you know, someday maybe we'll retire on the beach. Well, you know, someday maybe we could have, but now we could never afford it even if we wanted to, so we can forget about that idea. Just since we were in Costa Rica, 3 years ago, they built these beautiful condos and this huge golf course by the Westin, and it was amazing. And guess what? The prices have now tripled, and all the good properties are gone, and nothing is left but junk. So we're not going to be retiring there someday either. But, you know, and people say things turn around. Well, with hyperinflation, they don't turn around, okay? And that's one thing that's really interesting about rare coins and precious metals. Now, precious metals have been holding their own. People are pouring their money into everything else. I mean, they're just going crazy with everything else. Money, you know, paper, real estate. My goodness. They're out. You go out to Coeur d'Alene where we just sold waterfront property for a pretty good price. In fact, our next door neighbor had built this mammoth boathouse that just devastated our view. He was just in the newspaper as the Priest Lake neighbor of John Stockton, who just lost a lawsuit where they had to pay $500,000 to Cliff Mort, who's also a friend of mine, because Cliff had bought a piece of property and was, I don't know what he was going to do. I won't get into what he was going to do with it. And Todd Brinkmeyer and John Stockton decided that they could sneak in behind him and pay another $500,000 because the equity was there. I don't even know if they paid that much more. I don't know. But they had this big, you know, they just basically saw an opportunity. Someone saw it before them and they thought they'd come in with their big money muscle. And they tried to buy it out from underneath Cliff Mort, which is really sad because Cliff's a good guy. Cliff's friends with Todd Brinkmeyer. It's just a mess. People just, greed kills. And Todd Brinkmeyer, who was our next door neighbor for the last 7 years, he's just very, very wealthy. Very, very wealthy. 7 airplanes, 3 of them of which are jets, okay? So anyhow, when he built his great big, he got this boathouse approved, the biggest, ugliest, most horacious thing you've ever seen in your life. He got it approved because of his connections with the state and the right people and whatnot and so forth. And that had a huge impact on us leaving. And we sold our house for, you know, for a heck of a strong price. But now we probably should have waited because the market's gone way up and blah, blah, blah. Which brings me to another point, and then I will go on to something of much better substance. First of all, we bought another house up in Green Acres on 30 acres. There was 60 available. People were, you know, tough to deal with. They're old. They're 86. They'd built a very gorgeous home, absolutely just drop-dead gorgeous. However, the colors they used were terrible. The dining room was what she called eggplant, and I call hideous purple. The great room had bright lime green carpet and lime green drapes. Our master bedroom that I'm stuck in still has purple walls and wallpaper, lavender carpet, pink granite. Yes, what I'm telling you is true. And other things like the tiles is kind of a nice onyx black tile with, but it's got a great big 8-inch wide pink granite stripe all the way around the outside. And yeah, it's ugly. I'll give you that. But the house was solid clinker brick, absolutely magnificent. It's got a big, long driveway and a huge cobblestone circular area in front with a water feature fountain. And it's potentially pretty. The biggest problem is I'm going to have to find the money to do some basic updating. It needs, a redo. In other words, walls moved and stuff and the master and stuff, but I don't have the money. And so I'll work with some friends. And hopefully be able to do, you know, move some walls and change a lot of the surfaces and especially paint. And we've talked about it, my wife and I, 150 times. And we have all kinds of ideas, which brings me to a quick thing I'm going to throw out there. If there's any contractors out there, and folks, I'm talking about a serious home. I'm not, you know, right now, the biggest thing is the market's crazy. To find someone who isn't, you know, immediately busy, it doesn't have to be immediate, but, you know, we want someone who's fair, who can work with us, move some walls, do some things, but we're not looking for, you know, some high bore, blow and go, killer, king. We've had some different people out. One in particular had a crew of 38. Can you imagine what it costs to pay a crew of 38 to come into your house? No, thanks. Okay, but, I've done a lot, as I've mentioned, and maybe some of you have listened, I've done a lot of remodels and upgrades and renovations, and I always specialize in the high end. And I just wanted to give a quick plug to a good friend of mine named John Springs. He owns United Floor Coverings. I've been around the block. I mean, I've done many, 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 many millions of dollars of real estate development. Well over however many figures. We'll say well over $10 million worth, okay? You've got great floors and quality floors and whatever kind of floors out there. I just wanted to let you know, if you ever are buying, any kind of flooring. I don't care if it's flooring. I don't care if it's drapes. I don't care if it's wall tiles, anything. Granite, well, I have a granite connection, but he's awesome too. John Springs is great. United Floor Coverings in Spokane. Just wanted to let you know about him. He actually does all the work for Costco. So if you get your stuff done through Costco, he does all the work. They called him. They wanted to get together with him. They wanted to quote, talk to him. So he brought in all this stuff, and they already had stacks of three-ring binders ready to go, and he was going to show them stuff. And they'd already done all their research of all of the flooring. Flooring is the term, but essentially, they do everything. You know, they do all the tile work around your, your countertops you know, you name it. I mean, I can't think of everything, but you name it. They do it. All the surfaces, carpet and hardwood floors and laminates and all of it. And I just wanted to let you know, good friend of mine does incredible work. Those of you who listen to the show never, ever, ever, ever hear a plug for anybody. I just want you to know that if you want to deal with the best and at the best prices, by the way, United Floor Coverings is the place for you to go. And it's just a, looks like a little place over on, I think, Monroe, maybe. And he knows the stuff. And you just ask for John, tell him Kevin Walter from Coins Plus, referred from the radio show. Good friend of mine, salt of the earth, service. I've seen him service carpet that was 15 years old that he told me of a, well, I know he's service carpet. He didn't even install. He's just that kind of a guy, and he's dealt with people terrifically forever. So that is done. I do need, I think I might've found the right guy, but we are looking for somebody who can do some work for us. We've got to add a one room. We've got to add a, we've got to take a bonus room that's about 800 square feet. We've got some architectural plans that are overkill from one of my very good friends that I grew up with in Montana. He's a principal of a company called Lakati Architects, top 10 in the world. So his drawings are excessive, to put it lightly. And they're a good guideline, and there's some things we want to do. If there's someone out there who's good, and I, please, if you're not good, I mean, please don't call. I'm looking for someone who's good and experienced and knowledgeable and honest and has connections with subs and whatnot. If you're out there and, you know, I don't mind waiting a month or two or whatever, just know that we're looking. But please, again, don't call if you're just, the weekend warrior. This house is not for that. This house, it's not a flip per se, although it is too much house for us, and we will eventually probably sell it and move on. And my wife and I want to build a nice little cabin. I'm a Montana boy. I want rock and timber, and I've got the whole thing figured out, I think. But that's where we're eventually going. So that is way too far more than enough. So let's just go through some notes I took while I was on my trip. And some of these will seem to have little bearing on anything at much at all. But they're just notes that I took. Now, I can talk about AOC, and I can talk about, you know, how technology has changed the communication among millennials. Folks, one thing that drives me batty is this texting garbage. I've got the, you know, if you're like 30, I don't know what it is. What was it? 34 and under, you're a millennial, and everything is text, 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 text. Which, you know, I like to text. I mean, if you want to get a hold of me, texting works. But, you know, when a conversation hits a certain level and it's time to talk, talk. I mean, pick up the phone and call and talk. Do not just keep texting. I've had people that say, hey, I've said, enough's enough, you know. Like, we've had like 30 texts, let's talk, you know. Or and they're like, and they'll just keep texting. They always say they're too busy to talk, or they're in a situation they can't talk, yet they can sit there on their phones for literally an hour and text. You know, no, it's rude, it's wrong, it's inappropriate, it's bad etiquette, it's not right, it's not personable. Don't do that. If you're a millennial, talk. And if you notice, millennials can't talk. They have trouble talking. And I mean, I've seen this with, you know, kids and kids that I've had and other kids, you know, they'll write and think they're just incredible writers. You know, I know of one young man who, you know, he's just right, you know, all the time. But it's all this solitary activity. It's all, you can hide from the whole world with your texting. You know, and narcissists, I'll never forget years back when Ken Ortiz did a whole sermon on narcissism. And I had an employee at the time that was a narcissist. I mean, like, narcissist. And he came to work, and on Monday, he was online trying to prove he wasn't a narcissist. I got a kick out of that. He was trying to argue that because he cared a lot about his family, he wasn't a narcissist. And one sign of narcissists is they call everybody narcissists and so on and so forth. And if you don't know what a narcissist is, it's somebody who's so in love with themselves and so self-focused that they don't see, they have a skewed perception of the rest of the world. And I've seen that time and again, and that's becoming more and more of an issue in this world. People just don't do what they used to do. They don't step up, and they don't take care of women. And I remember growing up, you know, and if you help old ladies walk across the street, you always open the door for a lady. I actually had a lady one time tell me she was offended. She says, I can open doors for myself. Didn't matter who it was, but it was a certain type of lady. And she was offended that I had held the door open for her. Well, you know what? I don't care because I grew up in an era. It doesn't even matter what era I grew up in. Being a gentleman is the right thing to do. Am I wrong? You know, in that, I challenge each and every one of us believers, each and every one of us, to be polite and kind and good and you know, on and on and on. You know, be good believers, be good examples of Christ. And, you know, that is absolutely who we are. There's a word that I think we have lost, and it's called courtesy, okay? It's being courteous, you know? There's a courtesy, you know? I mean, there's verses that, you know, let no corrupting talk come out of your mouth, but only good for building up. Titus, to speak evil to no one. Avoid quarreling. Be gentle. Show perfect courtesy toward all people. Titus 3:2, he says, and to show perfect courtesy toward all people, to be an absolute gentleman or a fine lady, right? Or Matthew 7, so whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Jesus said it himself. To love your neighbor as, well, he said to love your God with all your heart, soul, strength, mind, and whatever, spirit, and to love your neighbor as yourself. Well, you wouldn't want people to be rude to you and ignore you and slam doors in your face and call you names or jump in front of you in line or take cuts or blah, 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 right? And, you know, at the same time, one time I was at the airport and I was super, super late. I mean, and there was reasons. Most of it was, if you take like 5:30 Spokane flight a.m., man, the lines are terrible. Security, I just flew back from Costa Rica. Terrible, just terrible. Huge, huge delays. Oh, my goodness. And I mean, delayed flights all over. We got stuck in Charlotte, North Carolina. Luckily, we were able to make it to Phoenix and, you know, back home. I love to be at my destination, but I hate traveling and to watch the behavior of people. You know, some people are very polite. I don't know what's happened to stewardesses, but I'll tell you what, man, airline stewardesses are tough. My best experiences have been with Alaska and Delta. I thought American would be good, but like my wife said, this whole trip we flew American and they were just rude. And but nobody's as bad as United. My wife and I will fly an extra day or go a different route and pay more money to avoid United. United's the one that beat up the, the doctor we all got to see on TV. Well, they did a lot more than that. I mean, we've been through the ringer with them so many times, treated in ways that were terrible. And then when United got in trouble, all of a sudden the CEO came down with the yoke of power, and he started trash-talking the customers. Guess what? It always comes from the top. When we first moved out here, we used to go to Marie Callender's for breakfast every Sunday for a buffet. I loved it. And these poor waitresses were just, they were kind of rude, but they were scared, and it was really uncomfortable. And then one day I saw the manager pop his head out of the kitchen and just start screaming at this poor cute little girl. A cute young lady, just yelling at her. And I'm like, I told my wife, I said, see, I told you, there it is right there. That's why is it always, if you go into a business and service in general is terrible, it's coming from the top. And folks, when you're in a business like the airline business, guess what? People have to fly. And that's the problem, is everybody's bound to this mess. They're stuck to it. There's no competitiveness. There used to be a company called Big Sky Air that flew back and forth to Montana. I used to go to Great Falls, my hometown, in an hour. One time I was flying back through and they stopped in Kalispell and then came to Spokane. And this is going to sound crazy, but Tiger Woods was there up at a golf tournament. And don't ask me why, but they put him on that Big Sky Air flight. And he was up front and I was in back. And there's probably a total of, 14 seats. I don't know. And I was in back and I'm a fair-sized guy. And the lady asked me, would I mind sitting up front? I said, well, of course, sure. So I was sitting right next to Tiger Woods the whole way here, which, was only an hour, hour and a half. And, the conversation was very mundane. And I never said, ew, you're Tiger Woods. Aren't you the greatest? I just talked about everything about the weather and life and things in general. And it was just really interesting. He was very somehow intrigued with what the pilots were doing, either that. And because back then, that was post 9/11 too. And they had the doors wide open. I think it was post 9/11. It was for sure post 9/11, but it maybe not long enough post 9/11. And, he was intrigued. We talked quite a bit. And that's why when all that bad stuff happened to him, I felt really bad for the guy because, he's just a simple guy. And then they, TMZ, that Harry Levine or whatever that does all the work for TMZ, he was actually going to do a special on the women that were accusing Tiger Woods. And he found that out of 23, only he couldn't verify 21 of them. They couldn't prove that they were where they said they were and all this stuff. And he said that there's actually a phenomena, primarily with women. I'm sorry, women, to offend you. But he said primarily with women to actually jump into these situations and try to take credit for being in places. And this is, I'm sorry to say this, but to say they had sex with people that they did, famous people that they didn't. I don't know why. But and Henry Levine, he did a show on Fox about it. And they canceled the show because they could only get 21 out of 23. They could not verify. And the rest, the other two, didn't want to participate. There was no show left. So, what Tiger did and what he didn't do, I don't know. And I don't care. But I know that he's a darn good golfer. And he's back. And he won the Masters again. And good for him. Because he always was humble and he always had humility, and Nike took him back and, he did okay. And so folks, we all fall, right? We all fall down. None of us are perfect. And I'll tell you what, when you see celebrities fall, do not judge them as if you're better. Because if you were in their shoes, you have no clue. and you don't know what it's like to have a camera sliding around behind you 24/7. Who knows what they'd catch you doing? You know, they catch you picking your picking your nose, and all of a sudden it's on public TV, right? So just understand, have empathy. It's not an easy world. I don't believe for those people. So let's just pump through some notes that I've got here. Whether good, bad, or indifferent, I don't know exactly whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. But we were talking about courtesy, right? How about be kind to one another, tenderhearted? This is Ephesians 4:32. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another as God in Christ forgave you. Jesus Christ gave up his soul, gave his body to the greatest beating any human being has ever endured. For those of you who do not understand it, the Romans were specialists at brutality and torture and absolute hideous, reckless, destructive, heinous, enough said. They would use these whips with 8 shards of bone where they would whip all the way across your body, under all the way to the other side, and then they would tear shreds of skin off your back. They'd go all the way down your rear end, all the way down the back of your legs. They would just shred you to bits. And then what did they do with Jesus? Then, you know, this went on, and, you know, the crown of thorns and on, and beatings and punching and everything you can imagine. And then after all that, making him carry his own cross, no water, no food, no nothing. And, you know, there are stories of people feeding him or giving him water along the way. The Roman guards telling him not to. And I believe that the Holy Spirit interceded and stopped the Roman guard for some reason, because he stopped, which is really interesting. And when you read the story, you know, of who gave Jesus the water on the road to, you know, on the road to his crucifixion, it's kind of weird that it allowed it. And it's like, oh, was it Simeon or I can't remember. According to the church, Veronica, maybe. I don't know who it was. But yeah, anyway. So it goes on. They have, you know, according to church tradition, Veronica was moved with sympathy when she saw Jesus carrying his cross to Golgotha and gave him her veil that he might wipe his forehead. Jesus accepted the offering, held it to his face, and then handed it back to her, the image of his face miraculously impressed upon it. I believe that to be possible. I know about the Shroud of Turin, the molecular explosion, basically the equivalent of what the same amount of power that created the universe, impressing Jesus' entire body onto this veil, if you want to call it that, or shroud, that they would wrap them from they'd start from 1 foot from your feet. They'd go all one long sheet, one kind of one long roll, like almost like gift wrap paper, but made out of a certain cloth. They'd go all the way up and back over your head and all the way back down. And his whole body was impressed into this in such a way we cannot reproduce it. Of course, the doubters have, you know, always doubted, but I've done research on it, and I went and saw a speaker on it, and I believe it wholeheartedly. There's no question in my mind that happened, the Shroud of Turin is truly him. But there, you know, so they beat Jesus, drug him up, you know, he had to carry his own cross. They picked someone else to carry his cross because, he couldn't carry it in anymore. I mean, no one can, he could not carry his own cross anymore. He was out of strength. He was out of power. And Simon of Cyrene or something like that. These names just don't pop in my head like they used to. And he was compelled by the Romans to carry the cross. So they saw that Jesus, he was out. He was done. He was spent. It was all of his energy was gone, right? He fell. He couldn't carry the cross anymore. It was the top part of the wood. I mean, it was a level of torture that you and I just can't even comprehend. And, you know, those are the kind of people we want to be. And that's what Jesus did for you, whoever's listening. You, for me. He did it for us, right? That's the Jesus that we serve. He gave, I believe, the greatest beating in the history of the world because of his purity. And then we get into, you know, let the weak say, I am strong. And man, did God give Jesus strength to endure. And Satan had his day with Jesus, didn't he? You know, what is it in Joel 3:10 or whatever? Beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. And then it says, let the weak say, I'm a mighty man. Hasten and come, all you surrounding nations, and gather yourselves there. Bring down, O Lord, your mighty ones. Let the nations be aroused. You know, and on it goes. Let the weak say, I am strong. And God gave each of us a talent and an ability. And this is just stuff that was going through my mind, and I'm going to go through it. It may seem random. But each and every one of you is given a talent. We know about the parable of talents, right? But do we take it serious? I mean, how serious do we take the parable of talents? We need to understand that you're not a, you know, worse person than the other person. What is amazing is we watch America's Got Talent, right? And what do? Ooh, and ah, and oh my gosh, look at that. Oh my gosh, that person's so amazing. And we, you know, we're just amazed. I love Matthew 24 and 25. They're my favorite scriptures. I should probably just do shows strictly on them. Man, is there some good information there. But we've got the parable of talents for, you know, you've got, it says, it was like a man about to go on a journey. He called his own what? His own slaves. We are God's bond servants. And he entrusted his possessions to them. He entrusted his possessions to them. My business, I'm in the gold and coin business. I entrust my possessions to my people. I just left for 2 weeks. I entrust my possessions to my people. And then it talks about, you know, to one he gave five, to another two, and to another one, each according to his own ability, and went on his journey. Now that's an interesting statement. Each to his own ability. And so God made you exactly the way you are. You know, he made you specifically with specific talents and specific abilities. One's not better than the other. I mean, an Olympic level track star is no better than a phenomenal accountant. Can a good accountant or teacher or janitor, for that matter, can they impact the lives of others? Yes. I mean, there's people out there with talents that are ooh and ah. And in a lot of cases, I've had situations where I've kind of been convinced that the guy with the one talent is the guy with the curse. I mean, one talent, isn't it interesting? If you've got one talent, what are you going to do with it? I mean, is it? Are you a great pianist? Are you a great musician? Are you a great singer? I've mentioned I had an employee here who had one talent. He was he had a photogenic memory for coins, and he had a lot going for him. And he married a gal who, you know, didn't help bring the best out of him. And you know, one thing led to another, and there was theft involved, and things just got really bad. And it's interesting that, you know, you've got, he gave him five talents, two talents, one talent, and then the one who got five, what'd he do? Boom. He went out and he traded and he worked with him and he doubled his money. That's cool. Then the two, what'd he do? Double his money. But the one who received the one went away. I don't get this. Why the guy, the one? Jesus knew. Now, how can it be that Jesus says he gave to each of us according to our ability? Well, who gave us our ability? He did. If Jesus gave you that ability and then said, here's one talent, that's all you're good for. I don't know. Sometimes I get confused by that. But then isn't it interesting that when the master came back, And he basically said, what'd you do? And the five brought him five more. First of all, trustworthiness, major trustworthiness. That's huge trustworthiness, right? There's a lot going on here. And he's like, well done, good and faithful servant. You rock. You know, you'll spend eternity with me, and I'm going to give you a lot more responsibility. He says, I'm going to put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. That's you know, when he says he comes back to reap, the reaping is when we pass. And then he says also to the one who gave two talents, he said, master, you gave me two, and now here's two more. And his master said, praise be to you. Know, you, he basically said, well done, good and faithful servant. You know, you were faithful with a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Number one, it shows the guy was honest and the guy worked hard and he respected his master's money. That's important as an employee. Respect your master's money. Respect your boss's money. Respect your company's money. You're working for the Lord, not for man. I don't care if your boss is a jerk. I don't care if you don't think you make enough money. If you don't think you make enough money, go find another job. You know, and you say, but I can't, but I, okay. Fine. Serve the Lord. Just work as unto the Lord, period. And then he comes to the guy with one talent and says, master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you didn't sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So basically, it's like he says, you don't deserve a thing. You know, you just woke up one day, you had all this money. It's not even yours. You really don't deserve it. Which is interesting, to say the very least, that he would approach him that way. I find that shocking and so on and so forth. But he said, you don't deserve this. It's not yours. But here's your money back. I buried it in the ground. Well, so first of all, I don't think that that servant, if you would like to call him that, I don't think that he ever intended to return the money in the first place. I don't think he ever thought the master was coming back. I don't think he cared. I think he was lazy. I think he was just entertaining himself. I'm going to admit I've seen that in my own employment situation. Not me myself, but people I've employed. I always tried to excel well. I always tried to serve the Lord and so on and so forth. But the guy with the one talent, he goes, I went and hid it in the ground. See, have what's yours. It's like, okay, well, I never really expected you to come back. I didn't try. I didn't care. I used it for my own benefit, maybe. But his master answered and said to him, you wicked, lazy slave. You knew it, you know, and this is sarcasm. Kind of. He says, if you knew that I reap where I didn't sow and I gather where I scattered no seed, then why didn't you at least put my money in the bank on so that on my arrival I'd receive my money back with interest? I think the guy with the one talent was going to steal the money. And I think I went through that with an employee. He says, therefore, take away the talent from this guy and give it to the one who has the 10. So he totally rewards the guy that really went full throttle. He gives him everything. He says, here, have it all. You're the man. You did great. So it's weird. He gave the first guy 5 talents. He gave him the ability to handle 5 talents, which is bizarre, you know. And then that guy did amazingly well. And then he says, throw the worthless slave into the outer darkness, into the place where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And then it says, but when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he'll sit, you know, on the glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered. And he, you know, and then he talks about, you know, the final structure of things. But God's talking about each and every one of us on this earth. We're given a set of talents. And we need to be accountable for that. You figure out what your talent is and you get out and you use that. It's critical that you use that. He provides opportunity. And this is where people go wrong. They're like, man, how can that guy get so far ahead and I can't? God gives you opportunity. He gives you talent and then he gives you opportunity. But you know what? You got to kill fear. You get rid of fear and you take opportunity. You don't be a fool. Use your brain. You seek wise counsel. I spent years in banking counseling people on business decisions. And there's a lot of fools in the world that want to do really dumb things. And I remember watching people and saying, no, bad business idea. I'll never forget the daughter of the mother that lectured me and said, you're just too negative, blah, blah, blah. Well, they did open their business, and guess what? I don't even think they made it a year. I'll bet you 6-8 months it was shut down. You know, they'd lost everything. And I was happy. I used to help people. I would sit down and guide them and give them direction and show them where to go, you know, how to get there. Man, I wanted people to succeed because I knew that I was serving the Lord when I did that. So anyway, remember that God gives you the talent, then he provides the opportunity. And even the parable of talents tells us that. There's opportunity out there to multiply your talents. And so what did these people do? They went out and they multiplied their talents. That's what Jesus did. He gave them talent and then he gave them opportunity. So watch for opportunity, take opportunity, and, you know, utilize it. I believe that the reason that I'm in business today, which I love what I do. In fact, it's important to talk about because we're always out of time. Folks, we're living in a weird world. We're living in a time when the dollar is hyperinflating at a level you can't even imagine. You cannot even imagine what's going on with the dollar or what's going on with currencies globally. They're going crazy, bonkers, bad news bears. Okay? We are losing strength and buying power through hyperinflation enormously. So it is critical that you preserve and protect your wealth. How? You pick your way, okay? You pick your way. The things that are biblically attributed as true wealth are the sectors, the sections, the basic arenas of gold and silver, livestock, real estate, human life, and precious stones. And people have taken that and gone out and done some stupid stuff. Business is another one. You know, you can go out and you can get a business, but that's people. That's the one where it says gold and silver, livestock, real estate, human life. Human life. You have the ability, and if you hire people, they have the ability to create wealth. You just have to do good yourself, and you got to get the right people. God wants you to do that with what you do. Now, I'm not going to tell you right now, may not be a good, you know, it might not be a bad time to sell some of your metals and whatnot until Trump's out of there. I don't know when Trump's going out, but I can tell you right now, things have changed. I mean, people are acting nuts financially. They're crazy. They're cuckoo. They're I don't even know where the money's going. People are building real estate like it's going out of style. Contractors are buried. They're busier than they've ever been. Primarily building for the wealthy. So the wealthy are turning all their money into real estate. Well, I've learned the hard way, too. I've been down that road, and you can lose your tail pretty good on that. If you've got endless money, fine. But don't do what I may have done, not that I'm confessing. But don't put too big of a percentage of your net worth into one home. Yes, I did that. And then when we sold the house, we took a loss because we put way too much into it. It's the most beautiful home you've ever seen. And it wasn't a wise thing to do. So what I'm saying is don't be afraid to call us to see what we need to do. You know, right now, precious metals is a sound way to go. If you've got rare coin portfolios, maybe we should consider doing some trading. We like to look at people's portfolios, but consider this. Consider trading out, moving things around a little bit, being balanced. The balance changes as time goes on, but don't go buy paper. And for God's sakes, somebody was in here recently selling all their gold to buy annuities. Please don't buy an annuity. Oh my gosh, if you had any clue what a ripoff. I don't care what they tell you. I don't care if they tell you about their bonus premiums and all this garbage and all the percentages that they supposedly pay you because they're in the NASDAQ fund. And I'm out of time. It's a lie. Annuities I hate. I've been licensed in every line of insurance in four states. I've been an actuary. I have a degree in it. I know more about insurance than anybody you'll run into. Do not buy annuities. Do not buy annuities. I'll leave it at that. Give us a 5-star Google review. Give us a call. We'll check it. Free, really nice quality. Morgan Silver Dollar from the 1800s. Take care. God bless. Love you. See you Wednesday. Bye.